Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 109. It's October 1st, 2020. At 6:15 in the morning on Tuesday, March 6th, Michael Dubin woke up and immediately checked his computer. He was puzzled by what he saw. Actually, by what he didn't see. Before going to bed, he had posted a video about his startup, a company that virtually no one had ever heard of. His venture's website wasn't working that morning. Even though everything had been fine the night before, the site had crashed, and all he saw now was a blank screen. So he quickly hopped in the shower before heading to sort things out at the cramped office he shared at a startup incubator with a bunch of other entrepreneurs striving to get off the ground. Dubin was 33 years old. He was at this point an unsuccessful, well, failed entrepreneur. A few years earlier, after the financial market meltdown, he had gotten laid off from a digital marketing job at Time Inc.'s Sports Illustrated Kids and had applied to Columbia, New York University, UCLA, and a few other business schools to get an MBA. He was turned down by all of them. Frustrated, he'd moved to Los Angeles, where he stayed rent-free at a cousin's apartment initially while deciding what he wanted to do. Tall and charming with an easy smile and a winning personality, Dubin had studied improv on and off for 8 years at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York City, while dabbling in entrepreneurial ventures. As a side project, he started a social media network for travelers in 2006, not long after Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook. It never went anywhere. My basement has a corner of what I call the failed business corner, his mother would later tell a journalist. And we have a number of things that we have bought and he made me invest in that he thought would be very successful businesses. Which obviously they weren't. After leaving Time Inc., he used his marketing skills to do some consulting work for friends who had a Christmas holiday decoration business. Then he worked at a digital marketing firm in Los Angeles, developing and placing promotional videos online for corporations such as Ford. After less than a year, he departed after a disagreement with his boss over the company's strategy. His friends wondered if he'd ever find anything he was both good at and liked. Now Dubin was working on his most ambitious idea yet. In the eyes of many friends, it was grandiose, or perhaps quixotic would be a better word to describe it. His startup was Dollar Shave Club, a David taking on Goliath known as Gillette. Dubin had spent more than a year on it, but rather predictably, the business had gotten off to a slow start. What happened on the morning of March 6th would change that, thanks to his startup's 1 minute, 33-second video. As he headed from the converted garage where he was living to his nearby office in Santa Monica, California, the good news was that the video was going viral. A whole lot of people had been watching it. The bad news was that so many people were trying to watch it that the website server was crashing, or when it did work, was sluggish. The tech company managing the Dollar Shave Club website had put an expert to work trying to fix the problem, then a second, then a third, with little success. At 10:30 that morning, the head of the tech firm sent an unnerving email to Dubin and his colleagues. We've been working for 3 hours already to keep it working stable, and we need more work here. Hours later, the website was still crashing. One of Dubin's colleagues shot off an angry email to the tech firm. Can you please come to our office right now? It's 2 p.m., guys. It's 2 p.m., and Dollar Shave Club is still down. This is unacceptable. Dubin was in a panic. A week earlier, he had told the tech guys he thought his video was going to generate a lot of traffic and had urged them to be ready. Now this. With the website working intermittently, few people could watch the video, and it was also hard for them to place orders. It was a disaster in the making. After all his false starts, this was his big chance. What he didn't know at the time, what no one knew, was that the humorous video, painstakingly written and rewritten over months, and then shot in a single day at a total cost of just $4,500, would humble one of the most dominant and storied consumer companies in the annals of American business. Against all odds, Dollar Shave Club would go on to succeed wildly, taking a big chunk of its giant rival's market share and forcing it to cut prices for the first time in memory. More than that, Dubin, in the process, helped announce a disruptive business model for 21st century entrepreneurs to take on previously unassailable consumer brands. I'll stop there. These are the first words in the intro of Billion Dollar Brand Club, how Dollar Shave Club, Warby Parker, and other disruptors are remaking what we buy. It's an awesome book. A lot of business trade books are great. there's a lot that are, you know, almost all of them that are trying to have frameworks, as we've discussed, they're inevitably sort of repackaging prior work because things have remained largely, you know, business is business and has been for a very long, 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 long time. But the stories are really good. Upstarts and Everything Store by Brad Stone are great about current businesses. And this one here, Billion Dollar Brand Club, has lots of great stories in it. I like, too, his mother, Dubin's mother, talking about the failed business corner back at their house, his parents' house, failed business corner. It's Darren Roberts' rejection resume of sorts. Like, we should celebrate our failures. If you don't have a failed business corner, you're probably not trying enough. And I also really appreciate in 2012, it could have seemed like everything that needed to get built would have been built already. Gillette's Gillette. How could you possibly disrupt that, for example? And how could you make money in razor blades? You know, entrepreneurs that could keep making bets, many of them fail, but some of them, they wrest new ways out of what seemed before their daring, what seemed like hopeless avenues for inevitable failure. And so even right now, this moment, it can seem like all that needs to get built in social media or web tooling or, you know, even pick a space, they're all going to get reconstituted. There's still a tremendous amount of profit to be made in a lot of these spaces. Might not build another Amazon or another Facebook, but we don't need another Amazon or another Facebook. And there's incredible profits to be made. And this is important. These are good signals. That kind of profit-making, profit motive, it's very helpful. And another way to lens it, too, is the things that frustrate you. You know, the old adage of, you know, they give away the razors and so they can charge you for the blades. Well, the best critique is to go start something that competes with that idea. And if you hear, you know, housing's too expensive. Well, that's a signal to entrepreneurs to go build more housing, isn't it? And potentially also, you know, engage in the political process and change zoning and things like this. Fight with neighborhood associations for garage apartments. And, you know, Austin's going through this right now. It's having a very difficult time getting its development code changed, modernized. Certain people want much more infill, and certain people just don't want their neighborhoods disrupted. They want them to stay looking and behaving exactly as they look and behave today. We'll see how that goes. But housing's just one matter. All this conversation about healthcare, so-called, the health industry. There's tremendous opportunity there. Unfortunately, what we keep doing is centralizing it and letting these politicians and bureaucrats declare how things should work, and that doesn't foster the experimentation, failure, and disruption that's necessary to keep things moving. But so when you see lots of problems, whether they're macro problems nationally or in your town, in your neighborhood, or you just experience your own frustrations, you know, Larry David would carry a notebook, and when he would be frustrated waiting in line for coffee or something, he'd give a long list of his frustrations, and he would weave those with his mad genius into Seinfeld episodes and Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes. But entrepreneurs do the same. They just express themselves through a different medium. They create companies. And it reminds me very much, I'll put in the show notes, this great quote from Steve Jobs. I should transcribe it and read it sometime, just make a whole episode devoted to it. But it's his notion that once you realize that everything in the world was put there by somebody else who's not all that much smarter than you, and you can change it, that it permanently changes your view on living, on life. Also appreciate that Dubin was rejected by business schools and just went and did it. Just went and did it. And would he have gone and done it if he had borrowed a bunch of money to go get those degrees? I have an MBA. I'm not saying don't go get an MBA, though I do wonder these days, like, learning by doing might be a whole lot better than holing up somewhere and just reading about it. It's a paradox. You can do both. And I'm sure Dubin was doing lots of learning. He just wasn't in that environment. And now I would imagine that all of those schools would desperately love for him to come tell their students what he knows, what he's seen. So hopefully we can all keep adding to our failed business corners and until we find one or two or three that really hit. Y'all have a great one. Thanks a bunch.